So there, we're getting a new Pride and Prejudice, and we're getting a new Sense and Sensibility this year. We're really being spoiled.
Yeah, what's
and
what's
we already deal? We already had a new Hamlet too.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot to turn.
What did you ask, Brennan?
What's the deal with them? Are they movies or series?
One of them's TV. One of them's a movie, I believe.
Okay.
I believe Pride and Prejudice is television.
Let me see. Actually,
I thought it was Sense and Sensibility is television.
Man, I couldn't fucking tell you.
It's supposed to be. It looks
2026.
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice is a television series.
Is a series. It's going to be on Netflix.
Sense and Sensibility is a film. And I was right about both things.
Lee, and you know what? Lee knew she was right.
Let me look up Sense and Sensibility, too.
Daisy Edgar Jones. Do you know what? Who is it? I don't think that the people in Sense and Sensibility are very hot. Not that they're not attractive people, but like, I was watching the trailer for Sense and Sensibility, and I was like, all right, show me Edward Ferrars. And I was like, ugh.
Who is it? Who's Edward Ferrars this time?
George McKay.
George McKay.
Oh, he's okay looking. He's sort of that rat boy summer. Are we going to play Smash or Pass with the cast of new Sense and Sensibility?
Colonel Brandon is being played by a 39-year-old.
He's interesting looking.
A little young. Who's the actor?
Herbert Nordrum.
I don't like these men. I don't like Herbert. I mean, no offense to them. They're clearly doing well for themselves if they're in these movies, and people must like the way they look, but they're not for me. Welcome to another episode of Why Did We Watch This, the podcast where three friends sit down, watch a shitty movie, have a nice drink, and talk about what was good, what was bad, and how we could all do it so much better. We are here for another mini episode where we'll be introducing the movie we'll be doing in 2 weeks. And I'm your host, Lee Delahanty.
I'm Chris Revell.
And I am Brendan Drischler.
That is right. And we are here in the tail end of our Summer of Games, doing our final mini where, as we have been doing, well, our final mini of good. I see Chris shaking his head there. Our final mini of encounter to the main episodes where we watch bad game movies. We have tried to counter that by watching movies about game featuring games that are not so bad or maybe even good.
Yeah,
we'll talk. This week we are going to discuss 2006's Silent Hill, directed by Christoph Gans. And I don't know really what else to talk about.
Well, we should also mention what we'll be doing in 2 weeks from now.
Oh, true.
To say Battleship. 2012's Battleship, directed by Peter Berg.
What a picture.
Yeah, it's based on a board game. It's really shitty.
It's probably one
of the shittiest movies ever, not even taking board games or games into consideration. It's got to be pretty high or pretty low on the list, depending on how you're ranking things.
It also has the dubious distinction of being a notorious bomb at the time, but is now a largely forgotten film.
Yes, I think if you remember it all, you remember it because it flopped heavily, and that's about all you know about it. And maybe you remember that Rihanna showed up for some reason.
Yeah.
Who can say? I guess Rihanna wanted to have a little fun. Why not?
And that this was a part of Taylor Kitsch's, like, barnstorming year of being in, like, three or four movies.
Yeah, like, three big movies that should have, you know, really pushed him to the foreground of young actors in Hollywood, and all three kind of tanked horribly. But we'll cover that a little bit in 2 weeks. I will also throw out, of course, the drink that we'll be making to accompany Battleship is called a paper battleship. It's an alcoholic slushy. It's 3/4 of a cup of honey bourbon, 3/4 of a cup of Amaro Nonino, 3/4 of a cup of Aperol, 3/4 of a cup of lemon juice, and some sea salt. It's a very easy drink. You just mix all the ingredients except for the sea salt in a mason jar with a lid and store it in the freezer at least overnight. You can store it longer. It'll keep for a while. Before you actually serve the drink, add a dash of sea salt and stir the mixture gently until it's slushy. It won't freeze entirely because there's a lot of alcohol in it, but it will be a little solid, and you want it to get a little more of a nicer consistency. So give it a little stir and then pour it into a coupe glass. As you can tell, this drink is almost entirely alcohol. So, you know, use a small glass. Don't drink a whole lot of it. You're going to feel it.
I'm very excited. I love basically all of the ingredients of this one. Love a paper plane. So I think I'm also going to love a paper battleship.
So should we talk about Silent Hill?
We should. I'm so glad we watched this movie.
We've all seen them before.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember correctly, we are all at least various levels of pro Silent Hill the movie.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. I don't really like Silent Hill that much. I mean, I'm not like on Silent Hill as a whole thing.
Right.
Do we feel the need to discuss the plot at all?
I mean,
if we had to summarize it, I can do it.
Chris should not open his mouth because what he'll do is tangent it to fucking hell and back.
It's true.
The basic plot of Silent Hill in any form is, this is strictly the first game, of which there are multiple. There's a movie, there's a game, and there's also another game, which is almost, well, it's different, but it's also the same, of the first. There's a remix of the sort of the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, it's actually in the game, a guy and girl, father and daughter, in the movie, mother and daughter, go to Silent Hill on vacation. Nice. In the movie, it is not on vacation. In the movie, it is because her child is like having nightmares about Silent Hill specifically. Then they crash the car. And then, oh no, Silent Hill is really fucking spooky and my daughter's missing. I gotta go find my daughter. And then, oh my God, there's a girl that kind of looks like my daughter, but she's not my daughter. And everyone's talking about this girl called Alessa. And maybe Alessa is responsible for all the crazy spooky shit that's happening in town. And there's weird monsters. And there's a woman named Dahlia, who's maybe this other girl's mom. And then there's a weird evil cult. And it turns out that this other girl, who's not your daughter, whose name is Alessa, is some kind of weird witch slash deity and is responsible for all the bad shit. And you either have to, you're going to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie, it's like, in the game, Dahlia is actually like responsible for everything. In the movie, Dahlia is just like the girl's mom and was told to like kill her daughter. Was like, maybe I don't want to kill my daughter.
Right. She like brings them to the cult to sacrifice. And then at the last minute is like, oops,
I don't want to. And the cult is like, too bad. We have to kill your daughter because your daughter is responsible for all the evil. And then the girl, because she's so angry about being killed, sort of like turns the town into like a hell dimension.
Mm-hmm.
And in the game, she is like an attempt by a cult to become like a deity.
Yeah.
But either way, something that she does splits her soul, and it turns out that the main character's daughter...
Rose?
No, Rose is the main character.
Rose is the mom, yeah.
Sharon/Cheryl is the name of the daughter.
That's right.
And it is, like, basically the innocent part of Alessa, like, the nice bit, and then Alessa, the one that's making the town fucked up, is all the rest of it. And so, usually the end of the game is, like, resolving it. At the end of the movie is resolving it such that they like reunite. I think in the movie they just merge again and she gets to have like Alessa.
I would say the movie is sort of weirdly ambiguous in terms of, I think, what happens at the end. I would say like it does look like they merge, but also the movie kind of never really comments on it in any real way.
It doesn't really give you a sense about whether or not that's a good outcome.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's not like you walk away and Sharon turns to the camera and like wigs evilly or something that. Yeah. She looks the same functionally as she always
does. It doesn't really... It may or may not matter if she wakes evilly.
No, like, that's true.
It's kind of like, you know, this town is the reason she fucked up. She got fucked in the first place, and that's kind of, she kind of fucks up the town, and it's like, great, you kind of Monte Cristo'd.
You did what you set out to do. Yeah.
Yeah, you're fine now. Maybe.
Yeah. Right.
But in the game, notably, there is like a 5-year-old-esque girl or whatever, like Cheryl. But the way that the game ends is that like Alessa is like merged and then like reincarnated as a merged form as an infant. And so like he gets his daughter back, but it's really not really his daughter. It's like he gets a new infant that is like the reincarnation of Cheryl.
He basically gets like a baby god.
Yeah, baby god.
Oh, every parent's dream.
I think it is also just worth pointing out that while Silent Hill in any iteration is usually very messed up and spooky and like full of mist and whatever, there does tend to be this dynamic where there is a like hell dimension time And then there's a relatively normal time.
Right.
It's, yeah. It's all creepy.
Right.
But there is
all
one where
all the time.
There's like a phase of the day where there are, it's just like Monster City.
Right. The way it's presented in the movie is that sometimes it just looks like it's a town where there is a fire nearby because it's constantly foggy and overcast and there is ash occasionally falling from the sky. And that's like the normal default evil. And then periodically in the movie, like a siren alarm will go off and then it will turn into like spooky monster evil, which is like the nightmare version of this already unpleasant world where, you know, a bunch of psychosomatic creepy creatures will pull out and try and kill you or just, you know, harass you or what have you.
I don't think psychosomatic is what you mean.
But no, probably
psychosexual?
Not. Psychosexual is a good one, yeah, because there's a lot of there's a lot of psychosex stuff happening here.
Oh, it's all over the games as well.
Yeah, like,
That is a hallmark of Silent Hill.
Yes.
Yeah, there's always spooky things. And it is always like kind of hellish looking.
Mm-hmm.
And that is kind of consistent with the game where it's like rusty and like
decayed.
Decayed.
Yeah. Not in the sense that it's like dystopian looking. It just looks like, I don't know, like everything is like a haunted house almost.
Yeah. I would love to talk about the game.
Yeah.
As a the difference between the game and the movie, and also the fact that the game has like a reimagining, which is a very different version, a third very different version of the story.
Yes. I did have a thought in that direction. I just wanted to share before we jump in. So yes, there are obviously a lot of changes or a decent amount of changes they make between the game and the movie, particularly in the story and like how everything functions and works.
Uh-huh.
I personally feel that Silent Hill as an adaptation really just needs to nail the vibes more than they need to nail any particular plot point. Just because game to game, the plot, even though it is dealing with a lot of the same themes and tropes, does change up. Like its mythology is pretty mix and match.
Yeah.
So at least from that perspective, I almost treat this like it's a movie about like Robin Hood or King Arthur, where I'm like, it's more just like you kind of nailed the idea more than you got any specific story in order. You know what
I'm
I
not
mean?
By opening this discussion up, I'm not trying to say like, let's nitpick the difference.
Oh, I get it.
I am saying like this specific game, because all the other Silent Hill games have very different stories. And the monsters in each game are also very different because they reflect the characters and the narrative and the themes of that game. There's like, I don't know which game it is. I forget. There's one really gnarly one where like one of the monsters is like sort of mostly bed shaped. But if you look at it, there's like the impression it's called like something like.
I think that's in two.
Is it in two?
I think so.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because it's got, I know it's got the what's his name? Where's my wife guy?
Mm-hmm.
but it's called something like Bad Dad or something akin to that. Because if you look at the one side of it, there's like the impression of like a child in the mattress and like a larger shape over it as if to imply like child sex abuse.
Mm-hmm,
sure.
Which is like kind of like a brutal thing to see in the game, but like
the second game ratchets up a lot of the kind of sexual violence based horror. And it does also a lot more body horror than the first one does, which is quite an accomplishment. The one that really always got me in the second game was the monster, and it appears a few times, where it's just two sets of legs sewn together. So, and they're both pointed in different directions. So it's like one will walk forward and then the other pair of legs just sort of flops forward at you. Really creeps me out.
Yeah.
So the one thing I had kind of seen online that I've seen some people talk about, and I don't know how much this is a thing, so I'm curious to hear, is that I know kind of that this movie, as we said, sort of just kind of cherry picks from the first couple of games of Silent Hill to sort of make its own thing, while sticking with the broad strokes seemingly of, you know, parent trying to find kid, pretty much. The thing that I had seen some people say, and again, you'll have to tell me if this is true or not, is that in cherry picking like the best of Silent Hill, it kind of removes some of the metaphor of what some of these evil like creepy monster things might represent, where they just kind of end up being evil, creepy things without any sort of underlying sense of why they're there or what they mean. Does that make sense? And is that true?
Yeah, I would kind of agree that they put Pyramid Head in.
That was the one that I had seen people most
and
often.
Like, that's from Silent Hill 2, and it and doesn't really...
I thought it was the first one, too. Am I wrong?
I don't
first
think...
appearance Silent Hill 2. I have them open here. Yeah.
Because it has a specific meaning, I think, to Silent Hill 2.
What does it mean, out of curiosity?
I'm Googling it.
Okay.
James Sunderland's repressed guilt over the mercy killing / death of his wife.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how that turns into a man with a pyramid head and a giant sword, but I do remember that.
So again, I definitely agree. I feel like the Pyramid Head in Silent Hill movie is 100% a choice of, like, it's iconic to the franchise. It was one of the big iconic monsters, and they're like, we gotta put it in.
It is like the monster,
right?
Yeah. That even is aware of Silent Hill would probably name as the monster they know from Silent Hill.
Sure, yeah. That's sort of what I figured.
Like the nurses in that are in, there's like a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nurse in Silent Hill.
Yes.
And I don't know that there's like a ton of them. There's not like a room full of them like there is in the movie.
Sure, sure.
But there is famously a nurse character in Silent Hill the game named Lisa Garland.
Yeah, that is a character. That is the one in the movie, apparently, who's the one who looks at Alessa and then gets like her face removed or whatever it is.
Yes. And like that is the way that they have like a room full of them feels like, again, we had to up some kind of like horror movie ante rather than just have the character. There's also like another guy they cut out that was kind of important to the story in the game that I would have put back in before I made up other men to put into the game named Dr. Kaufman.
Oh, like, yeah.
Why didn't you put an actual character?
It was already there.
Part of the story, but it wouldn't have made sense in this sort of revised version where there's like this like weird sort of cult and witchcraft thing, I guess, maybe, but he could have been like part of the Brethren or something, like I don't know. I think they could have had another, you know, more stuff that's like true to the movie, so I 100% agree that it could have been more, but you do need monsters.
Sure.
And I gotta be real with you. I've like seen a lot of stuff from Silent Hill, the original game, but I've never actually played Silent Hill top to bottom, the original game. I've played the remake, the reimagining is what I would call it, the on Wii, which is a very different game.
Mm-hmm.
Very different story. So I know like a lot of the stuff, and I've like read about what happens in it. So I have an understanding of the game, but I don't know, like I couldn't tell you like what they could have pulled from the game.
Was the reimagining Shattered Memories?
Yes.
Okay. It is good, but it is very different.
It's a good one, and it's very different. And I think it's a good example of how, like, how many different ways you can sort of tell this story. In terms of, like, you know, you crash your car and your daughter goes missing.
Sure. So out of curiosity, when you said in the game they go there on vacation, why do they go there on vacation? Just out of curiosity.
I think they like get an offer or like someone they know invites them. It's something like that. But then that person is just not there.
Sure. Okay. It's just like one of those creepy things like come visit me in Silent Hill. And then the person's not there in Silent Hill or whatever.
And then they kind of do that again in the second game where it's this guy gets a letter from his wife who he believes is dead, ? And it's like, hey,
I'm
at
Silent Hill. I'm chilling at Silent Hill. I'm gonna chill at the hill.
There's like in the game too. They explicitly show that like the main character who's Harry find an abandoned child in a casket, like a thing or something. So it's like somebody like snuck this kid out of town or because you know they knew that this had happened. Like somebody knew that they'd. This kid had been like created as some part of weird ritual. It essentially Dahlia did it, right? Dahlia like made sure that this sort of messiah, a godlike figure, would be reborn, and then made sure that it made it out of town or something. And then Dahlia is the one that like pretends to be sort of like a helpful villager when he comes back and is like, oh, the town's weird. Ah, you got to do all this stuff. And then is like, just kidding. Thanks for getting the thing I needed from you to do. And now I'm ready to bring back Alessa, the dark goddess. Or
Right.
So and then it's like, you thought you were doing the right thing, but really you're opening the door for this like horrible eldritch being.
Yeah.
Right. So it seems kind of like in the movie, then Dahlia was basically like split up into both herself and Christabella.
Which is interesting because I think Deborah Kara Unger, who I think the only other thing we've watched her in as a pod was White Noise.
White Noise, yeah, for sure.
It's not like she's bad in the role. It's just I feel like fundamentally Dahlia has less interesting things to do than Christabella.
Right. I would say it seems, you know, again, not knowing anything about this, it seems to me that the thought process behind the production team would have been that they're splitting them up into two characters because they really want to ram home this whole like mother daughter relationship thing. Like when what's her face? What's Rose leaves at the end at the church and she in. What's her face? Deborah Kara Unger as Dahlia is like sitting there on the stairs being like, why didn't she kill me? And Rose says like, mother is God in the eyes of a child or something like that, which seems like just because they say that line, you know, two or three times in the movie, it's really like the thesis of the movie and like the point that they're trying to drive home. So I guess the idea is they didn't want mommy to be evil in this version because they wanted to sort of portray her as like the version of Rose that couldn't accomplish what Rose does.
Which I think actually is an interesting thread to develop for the movie that is sort of unique to itself. I did like having that comparison, especially since Rose is the adoptive mother. I hold both of these things in my head. It is not really sticking to any of like it clearly is not treating Silent Hill as like a sacred text. Which in some ways I think is a little frustrating because as Lee pointed out, it's unnecessarily just creating new characters when you could have just, like, if you needed a man, the doctor's right there.
What's the doctor's deal exactly, out of curiosity? Like,
so he, like, works at the hospital.
Yeah, so basically, Dahlia, there is a cult, and Dahlia did, like, do this right to create this, like, Alessa basically is the one that was trying to have Alessa give birth to this deity being of the cult.
Okay.
And Dr. Kaufman, I think, was like working with Dahlia to like, there was a, she was like forcefully hospitalized Alessa and Dr. Kaufman was treating her and Lisa was forced to help her. And Lisa was like traumatized by like what she witnessed during that and got addicted to drugs. Or develop the drug problem trying to cope with that because Alessa would have these like wounds that didn't heal. And so Kaufman is actually part of like getting the good ending because he knows how to like undo whatever Dahlia is trying to accomplish because he realizes that like, oh, this is actually really fucking bad and I'm going to die. But also he's responsible kind of for this happening in the first place. So he's like a sort of like sniveling worm type character.
Sure. Right?
Like he's basically this like doctor that was working with Dahlia, the evil lady, to do this cult thing. Who knows why?
Okay.
And then kind of realizes he went too far and is kind of thinks that he is deserving of being saved. And depending on your actions, can either get away or die.
Okay. Okay.
It's crazy because I don't think it's that difficult to include that character.
It almost seems like just in the loosest, most abstract form, that's kind of what Dahlia ends up being in the movie too.
Yeah.
Where Dahlia is the one who's like, this is okay, I guess. And then when she actually sees it happen, is like, oops, what'd I do? And, you know, backs away from it. So maybe it also seems like, again, in terms of like splitting up characters, it seems like they also kind of threw that character onto Dahlia and was like, you have this aspect of him too.
Like they kind of composited them that way. All of those things being true, I still really enjoy this movie. And I would argue that it does effectively nail the feeling and vibe and just like overall unsettling nature of a Silent Hill game, if not like a specific one in particular. I also am just fascinated that I believe that one of the stated inspirations for the games, and I believe this carries forward into the movie as well, is Centralia, that abandoned town in Pennsylvania, I believe.
That's right.
similar to the movie, is just full of a constantly burning coal fire from a fissure in the ground.
Yeah, there's an underground coal fire. The town has been abandoned, and it's continually burning, still burning to this day.
It's like crazy to me that more people haven't like used that for like a horror film, because it is so inherently strange. And I feel like the fact that it is a real existing thing in our world makes it even more bizarre.
I definitely agree that like on a vibes basis, like this movie works well. Like it feels like it's a Silent Hill type horror game or story, I guess. And it keeps like the bones of like what the game has, which is this like sort of, you know, twin soul-esque, like, you know, daughter of this woman who's or person, I guess, because it is a dad. And it is vaguely funny that the famous story of how like there were initially like no, because they rewrote the movie to remove Kaufman and also change Terry into Rose, that there actually were no men in the script, and somebody was like, hey, just I have no men.
Yeah, the exact quote here I have from Roger Avery, one of the studio notes, however, when we finally turned it in, was "there's no men in this," capital letters. So they requested that we make more out of the husband character, which is what we had to do.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So that is why you can tell, because he's not really in a scene with many other people for most of the movie.
I mean, it does feel like they had to, you know, they already kind of had the story of the movie planned out, and so they couldn't just have like the husband go with her. So they had to just sort of be like, the husband is also going to be working on solving this mystery while Rose herself is solving another aspect of this mystery in this, you know, alternate dimension version. So, you know, you don't really ever see them interact. You just cut back to the real world where you see him and Kim Coates's police officer character just sort of, you know, like driving through the city being like, where are they? Come out, Rose. And or you know, he's digging through files and goes to the orphanage where his daughter came from or wherever.
Yeah.
I have an important question to ask the two of you.
Then I have an important answer.
Great. Do you find this movie scary?
I mean, I don't like watching gross stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's certainly very brutal.
It is.
I mean,
at one point, Pyramid Head, like, not cool.
The wire thing is very unpleasant to watch.
When Pyramid Head, like, throws Anna's
rips her skin off and then hits it at them. Yeah. Or also, similarly, the scene at the end when Rose is going to get Sharon off that ladder that they have her on, on, like, the upper level. And there's, like, that one creepy tall cult member who's there, and he's like about to stab her, shoot her, or something, and all of a sudden the barbed wire like pops out of the floor, surrounds his entire body, and just like rips him apart, and you just see Rose kind of standing there blankly as she's like sprayed with blood, and she's just like, well, keep going,
gotta get at this point.
It's like, I've already gone this far, can't react to this anymore, got no time for that. You know, you do get a lot of that sort of thing, which I agree is unpleasant to watch sometimes.
The one that freaked me out the most, aside from the wire scene, which I actually think was the one that really got me the most, but another one that really got under my skin was the like cockroach like creatures,
yeah, with like
that
their
just
little
have like
quasi-human
screaming
faces.
That was quite unsettling.
Yeah, I would say to me it mostly skews more toward creepy than scary. You know, like it's not like I'm watching this like covering myself with a blanket being like, I'm gonna have nightmares tonight or something like that. It's more like, this is unsettling to look at.
I think it's like unpleasant to look at a lot of the time, but like, I don't know, like scary movie, like horror movies that are scary, I don't know because there are certain horror movies that I that have caused me to be like, I should just stop watching horror movies.
Right.
And I'll tell you, this is not one of them.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I don't want to necessarily speak for you, Lee, but I know some of the movies that you refer to when you say that. And I think a lot of the movies that do that have sort of like an ever mounting sense of dread that goes on throughout the movie. It's not so, like this one is more just sort of like, we're solving a mystery and now it's creepy and there are little ash babies running around and we're back to looking for the kid and now it's nighttime and creepy and Red Pyramid's attacking us again. And so it's just sort of, it's unsettling and, you know, at times creepy and spooky and a little ooky to watch these things happen, but it's not something that I'm, you know, terrified of. It's some sort of like existential dread level, the way other movies have affected me.
So, like, I was trying to think, because I feel the same way. I did not find this very scary, but there were multiple things that I did find, like, creepy or unsettling. But I was trying to figure out, like, why. And I was wondering, like, well, is it because I've seen the movie before? Is it because I've played the games it's based on? I don't know. But I agree. Like, what I'm seeing is clearly meant to be a horror movie, but I'm not scared by it. But I know that does also have to do with what I would find more scary for me personally.
Sure. I mean, I wouldn't call that necessarily a failing of the movie per se.
No.
I think there are a lot of horror movies where I sort of appreciate the mood or vibes of them, but don't find them scary. So it's still effective at creating a tone, at creating a mood, which I respond favorably to, even if I wouldn't say it's necessarily scary. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of the times, and I think we've talked about this previously, there are times where I will just respond to a movie if the vibes are working the way that they should, even if, you know, the plot isn't necessarily firing or if there are some other flaws in it, I will still think it's effective at doing what it's supposed to be doing if that is the case. And for me, Silent Hill is one of those things where I think the plot's a little thin. It seems like, you know, for a movie that is what it's like two, this is, yeah, like a little over 2 hours. It feels like in the grand scheme of things, there's not a whole lot of plot that it's mm-hmm. working through in that 2 hours, you know? But nonetheless, I think it's mostly doing what it sets out to do in terms of creating a mood very effectively. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't bother me too much.
It also almost just feels like the goal is more to just show you like a parade of weird, creepy shit.
Right.
It seems like the emphasis is there over really following the plot.
Right. In the Wikipedia article specifically, Deborah Carr Unger mentions Alice in Wonderland as like a reference. And like,
honestly,
it kind of is.
Yeah,
right?
that does track because it is sort of episodic.
Yeah, right. She said Alice in Wonderland meets Dante's Inferno, which is, you know, pretty accurate in terms of what it's trying to lay out.
Yeah, she's absolutely right.
Yeah. So I think, again, because it does that well, I can overlook some other things. I can overlook the fact that it's not scary or that the plot is thin. Or frankly, I think like kind of the biggest issue. So the one thing I sort of respect about this movie that I hadn't really thought too much about until I rewatched it today is, on the one hand, it starts very quickly, which I respect. Like, it literally opens with Rose realizing that her daughter has, you know, gone sleepwalking again, and she's wandered out to like a waterfall under a bridge or some shit like that. And, you know, her and her husband like running out, tried to stop them. Then like almost literally the next scene is Rose and Sharon, you know, in the car driving to Silent Hill. You later see Sean Bond pulling up her search history and being like, oh no, she was Googling Silent Hill. So, you know, to the credit of the movie, it kind of starts that very, very quickly, which I respect. Like, one almost thinks that there is a version of this where, you know, you see them after that initial scene of them at night looking for Sharon sleepwalking, where they take her to a psychiatrist and they like, you know, and they talk to her in her bed at night and blah, blah, blah. And on the one hand, I like how quickly it realizes that it has to like get to Silent Hill. But on the other hand, I feel like it kind of does a disservice to the mother-daughter relationship. You know, I feel like we get very little of the actual relationship between Rose and Sharon beyond the obvious, well, this is her adoptive mother, so we assume she loves her because she's going through all this trouble for her, right? And so you have that going for you. But aside from that, you don't really get a lot of human relationships in this movie. So I do think that if people sometimes wouldn't respond to something like this, it's because there's not a lot emotionally to kind of latch onto in that respect. You know, given that the entire thesis of the movie is the whole mother is God in the eyes of a child thing, it feels like you do, contrary wise, kind of want a little more of Rose and Sharon in the beginning of the movie, you know?
Yeah. Just to give the mystery and the search for Sharon a little more like oomph, you know,
right,
like some actual weight.
Can I use this opportunity to talk about Silent Hill Shattered Memories?
Go for it.
It feels like an interesting transition point. So I don't know, it was like, they had obviously permission to do this, but it was developed by Climax Studios and published by Konami. So I don't know who like came up with this really per se, who was like, let's do a remake of this game that's like quite different. I'm trying to like skim the development thing. So the developer, Climax Studio, the developer of Silent Hill Origins, developed this game. They wanted to create another horror game, blah, blah, blah. There was a deal to revisit the game. Anyway, they remade this game on Wii, and obviously, like, this was after Origins, which I think is, like, a lot later. And so, like, where the first game had, like, a Rust aesthetic, Silent Hill Shattered Memory takes place in, like, winter. And it still starts with Harry Mason and Cheryl driving into, like, Silent Hill. And there's, like, a car accident, and you crash, and your daughter's not there anymore. There's this added framing narrative where Dr. Kaufman is there, but he's a psychotherapist. And you have these like sequences in first person where, like, you're in like a therapy session, from Dr. Kaufman, and you do these like weird things, like it does do things in the game too. There's like at one point he's like, here's a picture of like a family, color it in. And you have to like use the Wiimote or whatever, like color in the family and the house and everything. And, like, I think it changes, like, the color of, like, their character's shirts when you meet them later and stuff. Like, they actually do look different. Or, like, there might be multiple choices in some of them, and it might change how a character starts in terms of their behavior towards you when you meet them. All of the characters from Silent Hill are in the game, but their relationships and, like, sort of backgrounds are sort of reimagined and repositioned. So like Cheryl the cop is still a cop, but in the game she's like, oh, you crashed or whatever. Or is she a cop? Yeah, she is a cop. There's also like some bartender. Sybil's the cop, sorry.
Yeah, Sybil is the name of the cop.
That's right. There's Lisa's in the game. You can still find Lisa. She's like still this nurse. But there's like basically the game is like you walking around this town, which is like on basically like lockdown because it's so fucking snowed in. And then periodically, instead of like the sirens coming and like it going to Rust World, it's like this fucking like gale wind comes and then like everything freezes over. And then these like weird sort of golem like creepy figures come out and chase you. And they like you have to like run away from them and they shriek at you and you have to like hide in cabinets. And all you can really do is run. You can't. There's the only things you do in the game are like sort of walking around, talking to people and puzzle solving and then like running away from these creepy golem shrieking high-pitched voice things. And then when they pull you out, they do like kill you basically, but then they like sort of like after you die and like the screen fades to black, they like they're sort of like pawing at you gently and fawning over you in a weird creepy way. And it's just like that your character going around talking to all these people, and it's these weird conversations where Harry seems to have temporary amnesia because some of these women are characters that he meets seem to like think that they know him from before, or he meets them at different ages or whatever. And it's gradually revealed throughout the game and all these different like therapy sessions that you keep jumping back to. He just keeps going like, where's my daughter? Where's my daughter? Where's my daughter? And he gets directed eventually to like the lighthouse at the edge, which is like a place at the end of town. And then it becomes apparent that the lighthouse is the name of Dr. Kaufman's clinic. And he like walks into the lighthouse and like it's him walking into the clinic where an adult Cheryl, like an adult version of his daughter, is getting therapy because she's denying her father's death because he died a while back.
Mm-hmm.
And so the game is really about like her in therapy because she something happened, like whatever, he died, she can't like accept his death. And the game ends with you as Cheryl deciding if you're going to like move on or like continue in this fantasy of your dad still being alive. But yeah, it was an interesting game.
It is, yeah. I really like Shattered Memories. Yeah.
And I like the idea of like these things, these like weird creepy golem things being like your daughter's like toxic inability to let you go.
Right.
And like hunting you down. And the idea that like she's just imagining that her dad is like not giving up on her and just like forever chasing her impossibly and just can't reach her or whatever. It is just like a good, interesting game that kind of centers, and it's less, it is certainly less scary, mm-hmm. but it is like moody. It has like a sort of moodier, eerier atmosphere that I like. And it has like an interesting story that is more framed around like, Harry's relationship with his daughter.
I almost kind of want to know, given how prominent Harry seems to be in the games, why the decision was made to go with a mom instead of him.
I mean, I don't think it matters, right? Like, I think it would
no,
have worked.
It,
just
it,
fine.
It doesn't work either way, but I mean, it works either way, rather. But I'm just curious, like, if it does work the way it was originally written, then why did you decide to change it? You know, it's always just anytime you change something that in theory need not be changed, I'm always curious as to what the reasoning is, you know, and I'm sure if I looked somewhere online, I could find why they decided to go with mom instead of dad or whatever. But yeah,
I think honestly, the only reason it was a dad in the original game is because like men made it.
I was going to say, and boys play video games. So like you might want to go for a man instead of a woman.
Yeah. And like, it's well, even from like a writing perspective, if from like a, not from even from like a marketing, it's like, well, I know what it's like to be like, to be a dad. I don't know what it's like to be a mom. So I can write from a dad perspective.
Sure. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
I just had one other thought to share about the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else has a different favorite performance in it or if you had any thoughts about the acting at all, but I fucking love Alice Creech in this movie.
Yeah, I know.
Alice
Creech
is a lot of fun. Yeah.
She is nuts, girl.
So good as this like over the top cult leader. Oh my God, she goes in every scene.
Well, no, she doesn't. I mean, that's the thing I would say is I don't think she goes ham really until like the end. She's by and large playing it fairly like understated and calm. Like when you first see her, the first scene you kind of get of her is when Anna's mother is like crying after her daughter's skin was thrown at the door.
Understandable.
Right.
Understandable.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah, share your pain, girl. And Chris, and she's like, those two outsiders like lured my daughter outside. And Christabel is like, they're not responsible for your daughter, honey. Your daughter makes her own decisions, okay? And just sort of like hugs her and is just like, and we'll deal with you guys later, but let's say some prayers for now. And so I think by and large, she's playing it fairly composed and icy. I think kind of up until the point that she realizes that Sharon is Alessa, or you know, Sharon looks like Alessa and therefore somehow must be related or a part of Alessa, and that's when she kind of like, you know, is like witch killer, and then you know you see her in the church or whatever at the end like going, you know, hysterically religious and shit like that too. So I think she wisely underplays it up until that point. You know, it would be pretty easy to just sort of, you know, be Carrie's mom or something like that for the entire movie, but I think she smartly knows to sort of play it like calm and cool up until that point, and then she realizes what's actually happening here. But I do like her performance a lot, you know. And we also got her too in Sorcerer's Apprentice very briefly as was it Morgan or Morgana or whoever the fuck it was. Yeah, you see that like her CGI ghost version at the end of the movie before she gets blasted with New Republic melodies or some shit like that.
One Republic.
That's right.
Tell me what you want from me.
Oh, my secrets. So it's always delight seeing her. She's a fun performer, and I've always enjoyed her. So I mean, I think everyone's fine, you know. Everyone is mostly just doing fine work. She's kind of the one who gets to pop because she gets to, you know, go a little nuts. Deborah Kara Unger has to kind of underplay everything and just
everything.
Sort of look right and just sort of, I mean, wasn't this also a thing that she does in White Noise too, where she seems kind of catatonic
in a lot of it? She seems like way out of it.
Right. And maybe this is playing to her strength for, you know, her to sort of be a mom who's kind of, you know, traumatized by what happened to her daughter, and so she's just sort of like, why that's my daughter too. I don't understand. Why did daughter spare me? So maybe that's sort of playing to what she does well. I don't
really
know.
She's like, I'm gonna give you the DCU special, and that's gonna be a low energy. That's going to be some quiet line deliveries.
Chris, it's the DKU special. She's not part of DC universe.
But she could be. Don't count her out.
Hey, who's to say? Yeah.
Do you know what's crazy?
What?
It's on the Silent Hill film page on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Rose, like, the names and then the, like, characters in the cast section. Rose Da Silva, not hyperlinked.
Yeah.
Christopher Da Silva, hyperlinked to the cast of Silent Hill characters, and you click on it and he doesn't appear on that page because guess what, he's not in Silent Hill the game, and this is about the game, not the movie. So it's like, who did that?
When I click on it, it redirects to Harry Mason.
It says redirected from Harry Mason.
Sure. Yeah,
but like, that's not, it's no, it doesn't even make sense.
No, I assume it's just like, this is the analog, I guess.
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, this is the best we can give you here. This is kind of a take on this character.
Yeah.
Have fun, I suppose. Yeah, there's a lot of surprising hyperlinks or lack of hyperlinks or for some of these characters.
Or lack of hyperlinks.
Yes. But. Or, yeah, some character, you know, it's interesting to see who gets their own article versus who gets, like, a blurb in the list of Silent Hill characters.
The name
article.
Changes are, like, kind of baffling. Like, I
know,
like,
I do find that strange, right? Again, why change?
It's fine to do it, but I do wonder why. Like, Sharon to Cheryl is such a nothing change.
No, it is strange,
Cheryl,
right?
I
wonder if they, I don't know, like, maybe Sharon sounds more plausibly like a child's name or something.
Maybe.
Cheryl sounds a little more old late. Like, I usually
they look up like what
like that.
Was Sharon like only the most popular baby name back in the 90s, and now they have to like look at the latest popular baby
names. Right.
Nobody's naming their kid Sharon anymore.
No, yeah.
That's so weird. Anyway.
Yeah. No, it is a strange thing. I would say you know, I think, Chris, you had kind of alluded to this. It does really kind of, for better or for worse, effectively capture the tone of watching someone play a video game, you know, for good and for bad. Like, there are literally points, like the point where Rose is in the school and she sees Alessa's desk and she, like, touches it. And it's literally like the movie goes to a cut scene of kids taunting her and calling her witch. And then it cuts back to her, you know, in her normal time, closing the desk. And all that, like, that feels so video gamey. And also the things where, like, you have to find the key to unlock the door. Oh, look,
yes.
The key is on the belt of this guy. Or, like, I found this drawing tucked inside the hotel mailbox for room 111. Now we have to go to room 111. And it's a lot of that sort of nonsense. So I do, you know, it is, for better or for worse, as I said, very video gamey in that sense. And I think it's, you know, I'm not going to say that's a good or a bad thing, or if you find that, you know, cheap or trying, that you're wrong. But there is certainly a lot of that stuff in it. And I think that's kind of why I find this movie interesting, maybe also, just because it feels so much like, you know, I feel like a lot of times when you talk to fans of video games online, especially ones that have been turned into movies that didn't work very well, a lot of the times people are saying, well, why didn't they just literally turn the video game into a movie? And this maybe feels the closest to, well, let's just turn the video game into a movie, even discounting the weird, you know, character names or the cherry picking of monsters and stuff like that. This one truly feels the most like we just filmed the video game pretty much,
right?
For better or for worse.
Kind of both, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. There are good parts and bad parts of that.
True, true.
That is a big true, true. Yeah.
That's a huge, true, true. Yeah, just one, I guess the only other thing I wanted to throw out there is apparently, at least for the first game that kicked off the whole series, the inspirations were basically David Lynch and Jacob's Ladder, which I think really show.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I think the movie does do a good job of capturing those vibes.
Yeah.
No, definitely does. I think, like I said, I think it does a good job of creating the mood and tone and vibes that it sets out to create. So even with all the other flaws, I think I respect it for that more than, you know, almost anything else.
Yeah. All right, guys, we'll wrap it up.
Guys, go watch Silent Hill.
Yeah. Well, do you recommend it? Just real quick, I'm curious. Like, would you recommend it?
I mean, we all probably would. I mean, I'm a man on it, but I think other people probably like it better than I do. So go see it.
Yeah, I you know, like I said, there are parts of it that are flimsy. I think it's at times kind of unintentionally confusing. You know, it's not ambiguous confusing. It's just sort of vague confusing. And I think the emotional stuff doesn't really work as well as it should. But like I said, it understands the vibes and the mood. And sometimes vibes and mood are all you need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's probably one of the better, for better for worse, sadly or not, one of the better game adaptation movies, you know, obviously.
Yeah, they're few and far between.
Right. I would say, obviously, having seen the three that we've just watched, you know, well, I guess the six that we will have watched, you know, Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves is the best of those movies, probably one of the best. I mean, unquestionably one of the best game movies ever.
Yeah,
I would put this as second best, and then Werewolf.
Yes,
is
and I mean, we
Werewolves Within is third.
Yeah,
there are others, like we didn't watch Clue because was like, there's no discourse left to be had about Clue, but we all know that Clue is great.
Right. And I like Detective Pikachu a lot. But again, I don't know that there's a whole lot to say about that movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are some good ones up there. This is, you know, toward the better end of the spectrum, certainly.
Yeah. Well, that's all from us, I think. Come back at us in 2 weeks. We'll talk about fucking Battleship.
Fucking Battleship.
Oh, I can't wait for fucking Battleship.
Battleship. in the meantime,
made only for fucking.
Yes.
Leave us a like, review, 5 stars.
5 stars.
5, please. Cinco. Cinco.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Yep, in 2 weeks, babies.